My name is Bernard Marie.
Bernard, tell me a little bit about your history. I understand as a child that you were in the vicinity of what eventually became known as D-Day.
We moved in October 1943 from Paris to Normandy, where we had a family house over there. My mother decided that because it was very difficult to get food and everything in Paris. My father was not with us because he escaped to go on the French resistance when the invasion occurred in 1940. And my mother was acting like a widow during the time because, as you can imagine, if the German knew where he was, I will certainly not talk to you today.
That's true. So describe what happened. I mean, here you are, your mother, your family, yourself, and you're at Normandy, and then all of a sudden comes this big event on June 6th.
The thing's very bizarre, if I may say, is that if you know the map of France, you will see that on the going to south, you have the peninsula with the famous city Cherbourg. And Cherbourg was a seaport used by the German with U-boat destroyer and everything. And when the Allies were bombing Cherbourg about once a week, they were passing not very far from Normandy to get in Cherbourg. And of course we got the siren and we got down in the basement, and then 1 hour later, we got the siren again, and we get out. That's exactly what happened at June 6th at 2 o'clock in the morning, where I was sleeping very well, because for your information, I'm born on June 5th. So that was my 5 years birthday. So we get down, and we stay 16 hours.
Wow.
Without food, without light, without nothing, trembling on everything, bombing everywhere. During half an hour from 6 o'clock in the morning about until 6:30, well, before 6:30. I don't know, I mean, close to 6,000 tons of bombs were dropped in Normandy. And the whole starting at about 5:45.
Obviously, as a five-year-old growing up in the time that you did during World War II in France, you probably grow up pretty quick. Did you have any kind of a sense or understanding of the larger picture of what was going on around you?
Yes. And as you know, kids have what we call a selected memory. And is one typical example. My mother, due to her secret, was not very at ease when she go past a German soldier in the street. So we were going always on the other side of the road. Due to that, in my mind, everybody who wear a uniform was a bad guy. And on June 6th at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, my mother was not shooting, was getting out of the basement, and we heard her with her three sisters, my aunts and my grandparents, screaming, but screaming not the fear, screaming of joy. And I get out, we all get out, and me, I have a pictures which I will keep until my last breath, is my mother hugging a soldier. And I couldn't understand because I didn't make the difference between the GI uniform and the German uniform. So that's for sure I knew that. The same way that I was also very surprised that due to my mother getting out of every German soldier she was crossing. And by the way, if I may say, not every German soldier were bad. I mean, they were like every soldier in the world thinking, when I'm going back home. We were going to church. And at Sunday in church, was some soldier, German soldier there. At that time, the church was made in Latin. The sermon was in French. And I couldn't understand why we were going in church with the German soldier. But later on, I learned that Father Jack was a member of the resistance. And when he was doing his sermon, he had some word that only my mother understood and knew where was my father.
Wow.
So that's the reason why we were there. And so that's what I mostly remember, besides the fact that we didn't have too much food.
What was the aftermath like? So this happened on June 5th. You were in the basement for 16 hours, I believe you said. What was it like in the days following D-Day, the invasion of Normandy?
A big mess. A big mess. We couldn't believe it. The adults were more than overwhelmed by what was going on. People were very full of fears in their face. We had a neighbor who go to the other side of the village to see her mother. And her mother, when she saw her granddaughter, she told her, "Bonjour, madame." She couldn't recognize because the granddaughter had fear. She was older than me. She was about 14 years old. And that was terrible. We couldn't believe what's going on. We were not free, free, of course, free, that's for sure, but not free to go anywhere because that was such a mess of traffic. And on the top of that, we couldn't know where was the German who were trying to get out. Some of them were coming in some houses and asked for civil clothes and in order to don't be picked up. And so that was really a mess for the next couple of days.
How long after this event was it before, if there is such a thing as life as normal, because I guess really in your first 5 years, the norm was being caught up in the midst of this drama, this world war. How long was it after D-Day, after Normandy, before life kind of returned to normal?
First of all, us, after August 26, we got back to Paris when Paris was liberated. Mm-hmm. So we got back to Paris. Now, in Normandy, we were living in rubble. I mean, we had so many things who were destroyed. You have completely village which you will never recognize if I show you some pictures. The sister city of Roanoke, Saint-Lô, was completely destroyed. So the normal life was, of course, with more food, freedom. People were not feared to talk because I'm not very proud of that, but it's history, and we need to know history for not doing the same mistake. But some French people were pro-German, which we couldn't trust, so we didn't know which one. By the way, many changed their jacket on the other side as soon as the liberator were coming. Mm-hmm. So it was a very, very different and difficult time. And, of course, the construction took years, and especially in Normandy.
So you lived in Normandy just by chance. You moved to Normandy really during the period of time in which it was so tumultuous.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, that was my mother in Paris every Saturday morning on bicycle was going outside of Paris to get some food in the countryside. And she was going through checkpoints, German checkpoints and everything. She was 29 years old, a beautiful woman. And that was pretty risky. And we have the house in Normandy. We are all the family married. We are originally from Normandy. So we have this house in Normandy. So she decided to go over there. We have the house in the family for 200 years, I think. And that was a good idea, just for the food, by right. The way. We had our yard and everything. As a matter of fact, you asked me what we did after the day. Well, my main job was to give tomatoes and fruit to the GI, and I got in exchange a lot of chocolate.
it's hard, I guess, for someone who has not been in and gone through the experience that you have gone through. But I couldn't help but thinking, you're 5 years old. Kids want to play. They want to have playmates and friends. Was that part of your childhood during those days in Normandy just not exist, or did you have a little bit of time? Do you remember some good memories?
Not in Paris. It was more difficult. In Paris, we had the bad guy, Gestapo and everything. I didn't play a lot. I was always with adults. Normandy for several months, which mean about 9 months, well, close to 9 months. Yes, we had a life fair, but we couldn't go to the beaches, for example, because they were occupied by the Germans who were building the famous Atlantic Wall. And by the way, we couldn't go afterwards because it was bombs, we didn't explode, mines and everything. I think it took about 5 or 6 years before anybody could go to the beaches after the landing. So that was in 1949, I mean, that they could do that. So, of course, I didn't have a normal 5 years old young life, and we didn't have any preschool. Mm-hmm. They couldn't do that. And that was, we didn't have any Christmas, or very, very little. I didn't know, my first real present of things who surprised me was given by the GI with the famous chocolate tablet and everything.
Now, as a result, I presume, of your growing up here at Normandy, being at Normandy, literally, as a child, you've been doing this event for, I believe it's 30 years now, or this is the 30th annual D-Day World War II dinner. Tell me about this event. What is this about?
I came to the U.S. in 1979, not for looking for job, but for giving job to some companies who were working with my father on all the things that we were doing in Europe, and we were trying to find some supplier on subcontractors. And then I met my ex-wife, my future ex-wife. And in 1984, I asked to my former father-in-law, who was an OSS guide of World War II in the Asia theater. I said, what are you doing for D-Day? And he said, well, nothing. I said, what, you mean nothing? And I said, well, I'm going to do something. And I started this luncheon, which was a luncheon, which surprised everybody, of course. I had 575 D-Day guys. But guess what? They were only 58 years old. The youngest one, in 1984. I mean, that was 40 years, some of them 18 years old, so that's make the math. And I did that for several years, and it became well-known for the American when Tom Brokaw wrote this famous book, The Greatest Generation, and the 50 years, which, by the way, the 50 years, it will be on Friday, my 20 years that I came for the first time in the Roanoke Valley, because Bedford found me and they asked me to come to be the speaker on the step of the courthouse on June 6, 1994 for the 50 years anniversary. So I was pretty shocked in a way. We did the Vietnam War, we did the Korean War, and then the D-Day Memorial has been built 57 years after. The World War II even worse, 60 years after. And I couldn't get out. But there is some explanation. First of all, we are more and more on a 24-hour news cycle. But also, the World War II guy didn't talk. They didn't talk. And at the beginning, I was inviting only the guy. And between themselves, they did talk. Mm. They talk even a lot. But with their family, no. They didn't say anything. And I was very, very surprised by that. And that's when I started. Then some people find me. I was in Charleston, South Carolina, after Indiana, after my divorce. And then I came to Fairfax because I was dealing a lot with the French embassy. And that's when the D-Day Memorial here asked me if I can be in the advisory board and helping on everything. And I was in, and that's history. And I was here in 2001. And suddenly I moved to Roanoke. And that's it. And I started and I carry on. And I pledged in 1984 that I will do the dinner until one is still alive. And perhaps not as big as we have this year due to the 70 years on the public or whatever, but we still have a lot of guys who can come and enjoy that.
How many are you expecting at your dinner this year?
Well, I'm expecting World War II veterans, you mean?
Yes.
I will have about 75.
Wow.
75, and not only Europe, also some of the Pacific. The rest will be military, of course, and dignitaries on the public.
When you have an opportunity to meet somebody, as you have today and as you have all the time speaking about the D-Day, do you ever have a moment where a memory may come back, a memory of fear as that child, or a strong emotion about that night, those 16 hours in the basement?
Oh, yeah. The best example that I can give you is that when I was in Charleston during Hugo, I told to every parents, be sure to have water, be sure to have a light, because I can assure you, even now, I'm still not very at ease in a dark room. And in matter of fact, during Hugo, I was not very at ease myself. And the funny part, when I called my father on the big cell phone that we had at that time in 89, I told him, I said, now it's the eye. We have a silent sound with his sarcastic humor. Say, oh, that's like the war. Wait for the second wave.
Brian, thank you so very much. I really appreciate it. And it was a pleasure to speak with you.
Thank you so much.